Here. Here is where you can lay it down. Lay down all that you have carried, the weight of the world that has rounded your back, leaving you aching and exhausted. Here. Here is where healing begins, where burdens are set down and alongside one another's, their magnitude does not seem as great. Here. Here is where the door is thrown open and the light can lift away the shadows and what was hidden can now be seen. Here. Here is where you can rest, where nothing is expected, but that you bring all of who you are into the presence of the holy and of this loving community. Let us worship together. The words of Joan Javier Duval. Good morning and welcome to First Unitarian Church. I'm Angela Herrera, the senior minister. With me leading today's service is our associate minister, Bob LaValle. He's joining us from Buffalo, New York right now, where he's with his family. I'm with music director Susan Peck also, and lay leader John Eldridge. Arnie Gullerud is our DJ today, and we always appreciate the volunteers who round out the rest of our tech team. We're glad to be with you on this Sunday morning after a long and historic week. As we get started, John has a few announcements to share.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. Amy Lowell's Women's Harvest song comes to mind as the wheel of the year turns. I am waving a ripe sunflower. I am scattering sunflower pollen to the four directions. I'm joyful because of my melons. I'm joyful because of my beans. I'm joyful because of my squash. Great is a ripe sunflower, and great was the sun above my cornfields. His fingers lifted up the corn ears. His hands fashioned my melons and set my beans full in the pods. Therefore, my heart is happy. We have two announcements this morning. This coming Sunday, November 15th, we will include a candle lighting ritual in the service to lift up the people we love who have passed. We'd love to share your photos of the people that you'd like to remember. Please send them to our tech arts director, Chris Paul, at cpaul@uuabq.org. And please do so by November 12th. Each year in November, we hold a special ceremony to remember UUs whose names are on our congregation's memorial wall. In this pandemic year, the ceremony is adapted to avoid crowding together in our beautiful but cozy memorial garden. Instead of joining together all at once, you are invited to drop by Memorial Garden next Sunday, the 15th, anytime between 3 and 5 p.m. to join Angela in placing flowers and candles on the wall in honor of as many names as you would like. We will provide candles and some flowers, and you're invited to bring flowers of your own as well. Masks are required, of course, and social distancing is expected. And now, a special message from our Radical Generosity team.
I'm here. What'd I miss? Oh, nothing yet. We're still waiting. Hey, we're here.
Oh, hey, sorry. Oh my gosh. All right, so sorry, were you waiting for me? What day is it?
It's Monday, and this is our covenant group meeting.
Oh, good, I love those discussions. They make me feel so much less adrift.
No, it's not Monday. It's, oh, whoops, sorry. I meant Tuesday, Reverend Christine's Tao Te Ching class.
Oh. Was Christine late?
It's not Tuesday either. Is it Wednesday already? I better get ready for my shift at the food pantry.
No. Wednesday is Vespers with all that beautiful, soothing music and poetry, but you're not Susan.
No, I'm not. Well, Thursdays is choir practice, and since you're not Susan, this must not be Thursday either. Huh, where's my calendar?
It's been a crazy week. So much going on at church.
Is this Friday's No Potluck Theology get-together?
Oh, wait, When did I eat last?
No, it's not Friday.
Aha, it's Saturday. Time for my beloved Conversations Learning Pod, followed by Wisdom Circle.
That can't be right. Beloved Conversations doesn't start till October. It's only August.
Oh, boy.
No. It's at least September. Yeah, September. You can tell because the grocery store has Christmas candy now.
Oh, good. I need some more candy. Some for the trick-or-treaters if I get any.
No. I should pick some up, too. Wait, did we already?
Friends, I have some surprising news for you. It's November. It's Sunday, November 8th.
Oh, wow. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, boy.
Really?
Really?
Oh, this explains that 4th of July blizzard.
Time just doesn't move the way it used to, you know?
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people are feeling outside of time right now. Our usual seasonal markers and celebrations just aren't the same this year.
Yeah, at least it's a Sunday. I love Sundays. Zoom church is so beautiful.
I do love Zoom church. The sermons have been a real bright spot during this pandemic weirdness.
You know, sharing our thoughts and concerns made me really feel connected to the congregation.
And the meditation. I think that's the only time I let myself relax. I haven't actually slept for 3 weeks.
I think I've been barely awake in 3 weeks. But what I really love is the skits. They're the best, right?
Yeah, the skits crack me up. When is the pledge drive anyway?
October.
Oh, cool. Cool.
But wait, you said it's November 8th.
Yeah. It's November.
Well, this is awkward.
So I just wanted to check in on you guys and see how you're doing and if either of you was ready to make your annual pledge yet. We understand these are really strange times and people have a lot of things going on or not going on. And both situations can feel overwhelming. But while time might feel like it's standing still, it really is still ticking forward. And the board needs to be able to make plans for what the church will do next year.
Where are we at so far?
Well, we're at almost 65% of our goal, but we still haven't heard from a little under half of our pledging households.
How many is that?
That's a lot of calls for the board to have to make. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that if you haven't made your pledge yet, you'll please make it today. You can click on the grow icon on the church homepage or click on the link in the chat box, and that'll take you right to the virtual pledge card. It just takes a couple of minutes to fill out, but it's critically important for the future life of the church.
Okay, great. I'll do that right now.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, me too. Hey, is there an election coming up for somebody?
Well, I could listen to them talk about how great services are all day long. But let's light our chalices and candles now. Will you join me? We kindle these flames for hope and in the chalice as a symbol of our Unitarian Universalist tradition. May their light inspire us to greater service, community, and love.
Good morning. I'd like to teach you a new song that was written by the peace poets. I'll put the words in the chat box there. This is just a simple repetitive song, and I think it fits so well for what we're feeling right now. It goes like this. This is a moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when
you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love. This is the moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love. Let's keep going. This is the moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love. One more time. This is the moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Miranda Magnuson. Will you join me in the children's affirmation? We are Unitarian Universalists. We are a people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to share the Time for All Ages with you from Buffalo, New York, and where it's a beautiful, beautiful day. And I want to tell you the story called Who Loves the Dark? Who Loves the Dark? And it's by Sherry Philibaum. So there once was a child who got lost in the woods, maybe woods like those right behind me. And as the night began to descend, the child became more and more frightened. Now, I'm sure any of us would be frightened too in that situation, but what made this child even more frightened was that he had always been afraid of the dark. He was more afraid of the dark than any of his friends or his siblings. He didn't know why he was more afraid than his friends or his siblings. He only knew that when the sun went down, he was always very glad to be inside his brightly lit house. When the sun was all the way down and the only light was just a bit of tiny light from the moon and the stars, the child got so frightened in the woods, all he could do was sit down and cry, which he did. And soon he heard a voice say, "What's all that racket?" And he looked down and he saw a mole squinting up at him. And he said, "I'm lost in the woods and it's dark and I'm afraid." "Well," said the mole, "perhaps you could take your noisy crying farther down the path. I hate having to come out of my warm, comfortable, dark hole to tell people to be quiet." Then the child heard another voice. "Go back on in your hole, Mr. Mole. I'll take care of this." The child looked up in the direction that this newer voice seemed to come from. And in the darkness, he could see two glowing eyes looking down at him. Before he could scream, which was his first impulse, there was a flutter of wings and the creature flew down near him. And he could see that it was an owl. This owl said, "Please excuse Mr. Mole. He hates to come out of his nice dark hole for anything, to be honest." At this, the child burst out crying even harder than before, because as frightened as he was of the dark, having non-human animals speak to him was beyond his experience and a little frightening in itself. "No need for that crying," said the owl. "If you just give me your address, I can guide you home." And with that, the child did indeed stop crying, partly out of relief that somebody might be able to lead him home, and partly out of curiosity as to how an owl could locate his home with or without the address. But he decided he had little to lose, and the child choked back his tears and replied he would be very grateful to be guided home, and he gave the owl his address. And by the way, I hope everyone here has their home address memorized in case an owl ever has to guide you home. So the strange pair headed off into the dark forest in what the child hoped was truly the direction of his home. When his fear left him just a little bit, the child looked around, and though the moonlight was dim, he began to notice his surroundings a bit. At one point, he noticed a kind of flower that he had never seen before and slowed his pace just a little so he could gaze at it. That, said the owl, as they continued walking, was an evening primrose. Did you know that there are some flowers that bloom only at night? There are moonflowers and night gladiolas too, flowers that you would never see if you never went out at night. After a while, the owl said, as if musing aloud to himself, and of course there are animals too, who love the night and the darkness. Me, for example, I love the dark. In the daytime, the light hurts my eyes. So that's when I go into my tree and sleep. To this, the boy replied, well, I like the daytime. I can see to kick a ball. I like the hot sun at the beach. When the dark isn't scary, it's just boring. Boring, you said the owl. And she clearly had some opinions to express on this point. But just then there was a fluttering and a squeaking around their heads. It took the child just a second to figure it out, and he shrieked, a bat! And he started flailing his arms to knock the creature away, shrieking the whole time. Well, the shape backed away and, hovering just out of reach, said, excuse me, that's just my way of saying hello. Well, hello to you, Mr. Bat, said the owl. This child was lost out here in the forest, and I'm helping him find his way home. You're not hurt, are you? Well, said the bat, I'll probably have a bruise on my backside, but I think I'll live. But you're a bat, said the child, a creature of darkness. Weren't you trying to drink our blood? No, said the bat, but I've been eating lots of yummy insects who would have been biting you if I hadn't been around. Anyway, I couldn't help overhearing what you said about the darkness being boring. If you want to come just a little bit out of your way, I can show you something really exciting. My parents always told me never to go any place with strangers, said the child. Owl will vouch for me, said the bat. We've known each other for years and years. Owl agreed that Mr. Bat was indeed an upstanding citizen. So the group went off the path and traveled through the deepest forest for it seemed like just a few minutes, and they came out onto a dark beach. Here we are, said the bat. The child gazed out at the beach, lit very gently by moonlight, and thought, this certainly is beautiful, even in the dark, but I wouldn't call it exciting. Just then, there was a movement in the sand, like a little bubble of sand rising up. Then there was another bubble, then another. It looked almost as if the beach in the area they were looking at was boiling. And then out of one of those little bubbles of sand popped a rounded shape. Looks like you got here just at the right time, said the bat. As they watched, more and more shadowy shapes came up out of the sand. And soon the child realized what he was seeing. Lots of baby turtles, hundreds, climbing out of the sand. This was truly exciting. Once each turtle shape pulled itself out of the sand, it started crawling as fast as its legs would carry it towards the water. When baby sea turtles hatch, said Owl in a sort of teacherly voice, they need to find their way to the water. And they almost always do this at nighttime, because to find the water, they need darkness everywhere else to follow the moon and starlight reflecting off the water. Daytime sunlight is too bright and scattered everywhere. Oh, said the child. As they turned to leave and head back towards the child's home, Owl spoke again, as if thinking aloud to herself. You know who else loves the darkness besides all the nighttime plants and animals? The moon and stars love the darkness. That's when they can really shine. Oh, they're there in the daytime as well, hidden behind a wall of light. But when the wall goes down with the sun, the stars and the moon reveal their beauty. After what seemed like a very short time, the child and owl left the forest and walked down a street that the child recognized as his own. He was very happy and relieved, but also a little sad to say goodbye to Owl, to whom he gave a very gentle hug and a thank you. He went into his home and, being extremely tired, got ready for bed right away. Before he went to bed, as a matter of habit, he bent down to turn on the nightlight that he always kept glowing through the night to keep the dark at bay. But before his fingers touched the switch of the nightlight, he smiled and pulled his hand away. He got into his bed, pulled up the covers, and let the comforting arms of darkness soothe him to sleep. And that was Who Loves the Dark by Sherry Philippa.
What a perfect story as we get closer and closer to the longest nights and the shortest days of the year. Let's breathe now. If you've been holding your breath this week, take a few extra breaths right now. As we prepare our bodies and minds for meditation and prayer, check in with your body. See if it needs to loosen up a little bit. See if you can give your weight over to your seat a bit more. And just be held right here in this moment. Lay it down, all of it, for a minute. And just be. We'll continue with 2 minutes of silence.
We come to our time for sharing our joys and our concerns. Sharing either your joys or concerns together gives us an opportunity to support one another. Please use the chat bar for the sharing. If you're not able to write in the chat bar, please contact the church office or send an email to caring@uuabq.org. Please share first your joys, followed by concerns, as prompted on the screen. Thank you.
a very emotional time, and we see each other when we see our joys and concerns that we lift up. We see celebration within the country, many people feeling relieved, and we feel a celebration. We see people lifting up joy for healing, the possibility of renewal and redemption. We see concerns about the pandemic continuing, concerns for Elise's dad and problems having him buried, and Gretchen Fanslow taking a fall, and all those issues that will still be with us as we continue our work. So much mixed joy and concern. All these we lift up to the powers of celebration and healing and renewal that are known by many names. And I invite us now to pray. We lift up our prayers to the wellspring of creation, to the love that surrounds us, to the mystery. We pray for Chris Johnson, who's struggling with illness. May the support of this congregation help carry him to healing. And we lift up with sadness Beatrice Mitchell, who passed this week. We honor her life of commitment to service and compassion for the vulnerable. And may our memories of her both comfort and inspire us. And may light perpetual shine upon her. We give thanks for those whose jobs are significantly harder because of the pandemic. May healthcare workers and flight attendants and teachers and so many others know that their work allows our lives to move forward, and may they know our gratitude. We lift up all those struggling with illness, be it mental or physical or spiritual or emotional. May they find healing and comfort. And may those who care for them who are sick know that through their efforts, they bring love into the world. May they know our gratitude. We lift up all those struggling, we give thanks for the advocates and the troublemakers that don't step back from their righteous work regardless of the odds. May we celebrate their victories on behalf of the most vulnerable, and may they know support and success. And we pray for insight as we consider what the last 4 years has taught us about ourselves, what it's taught us about our communities, what the last 4 years have taught us about our country. We give thanks for the peaceful change of leadership in the United States. Let us remember that despite the change of leadership, it's not the end of bigotry. It's not the end of greed. It's not the end of ignorance. And because of that, we vow to continue to work to make a more just and caring world. And may we also remember as we move forward that political views are not the sum of a person's identity. As we work to heal rifts with our family or among our families and our friends, let us be gentle with one another, even as we compassionately insist that racism and transphobia are bad and that science is real. We can do that gently. May we rest when we need it. May we rise when it's called for. May we hold each other in friendship always. Amen. Blessed be, so be it. And peace be with you.
Our reading this morning is Ve Ahavta by Aurora Levens Morales. Say these words when you lie down and when you rise up, when you go out and when you return, in times of mourning and in times of joy. Inscribe them on your doorposts, embroider them on your garments, tattoo them on your shoulders. Teach them to your children, your neighbors, your enemies. Recite them in your sleep. Here in the cruel shadow of empire, another world is possible. Thus spoke the prophet Roque Dalton. Altogether, they have more death than we, but altogether, we have more life than they. There is more bloody death in their hands than we could ever wield unless we lay down our souls to become them, and then we will lose everything. So instead, imagine winning. This is your sacred task. This is your power. Imagine every detail of winning, the exact smell of the summer streets in which no one has been shot, the muscles you have never unclenched from worry, gone soft as newborn skin, the sparkling taste of food when you know that no one on earth is hungry, that the beggars are fed, that the old man under the bridge and the woman wrapping herself in thin sheets in the back seat of a car and the children who suck on stones nest under a flock of roofs that keep multiplying their shelter. Lean with all your being towards that day when the poor of the world shake down a rain of good fortune out of the heavy clouds and justice rolls down like waters. Defend the world in which we win as if it were your child. It is your child. Defend it as if it were your lover. It is your lover. When you inhale and when you exhale, breathe the possibility of another world into 37.2 trillion cells in your body until it shines with hope. Then imagine more. Imagine rape is unimaginable. Imagine war is scarcely credible rumor. The crimes of our age, the grotesque inhumanities of greed, the sheer and astounding shamelessness of it all, the vast fortunes made by stealing lives, the horrible normalcy it came to have is unimaginable to our heirs, the generations of the free. Don't waver. Don't let despair sink its sharp teeth into the throat with which you sing. Escalate your dreams. Make them burn so fiercely that you can follow them down any dark alleyway of history and not lose your way. Make them burn clear as a starry drinking gourd over the grim fog of exhaustion and keep walking. Hold hands, share water, keep imagining so that we and the children of our children's children may live.
Another world is possible. Another world is possible. There's a law that says churches cannot explicitly endorse or oppose a particular political candidate or political party. On this day, when I know many of us are personally feeling a sense of relief and celebration, I can see it in your joys and concerns comments. And if we're honest, some of us probably also experiencing a measure of schadenfreude. I'm remembering how early on in the Trump administration, there was talk of the federal government doing away with that law. Some conservative churches did, in fact, endorse Donald Trump when he was a candidate, and he liked that, I think, and wanted to reward them with a green light for future campaigns. Meanwhile, I sure know a lot of liberal ministers who had choice words of their own to say about candidate Trump, words that flowed freely in clergy groups, if not from the pulpit. But I said at that time that even if they did that, even if the government changed that law, I would not want to change the way we do things here at First Unitarian. And I still feel that way, even after these 4 years. Before I explain why and talk about what I do think the church should do, let me affirm that there is a lot to celebrate and be grateful for today. There was an outpouring of joy in our city's streets yesterday, up and down Central, young people especially, out with signs and honking and cheering all throughout the afternoon and evening. Across our country, spontaneous dance parties broke out. The relief is palpable and feels different than other elections in my lifetime. There is so much to celebrate today, especially after this year. This year. The year 2020 has been such a hard year that a couple of weeks ago, a sidewalk randomly collapsed under a guy at a bus stop in New York City. He fell through the hole into an underground vault teeming with so many rats that he couldn't even open his mouth to call for help without a rat going in it. And people on social media were like, that's so 2020. That's this year. There's a lot to celebrate, not the least of which is that our country will finally, at last, have its first female vice president and first vice president who is a person of color. As a religiously liberal congregation with progressive social values, we can also celebrate the ways in which many, if not all, of those values will be explicitly supported by our country's next administration. Churches can, should, and do weigh in on social issues. This church is part of a denomination that has taken stands in support of the environment, abortion, indigenous rights, and eliminating poverty. Our denomination has dedicated itself to climate action, dismantling racism, and has called for an end to mass incarceration and the war on drugs. But while it's true that many, the majority of UUs identify as political liberals too, and we tend to think of those concerns as aligning with progressive political platforms, they're not the same. As politically conservative UUs have noted, two people can disagree about the role of government while sharing some of the same social concerns. Unfortunately, that kind of nuance has gotten lost, trampled, as our country's politics have become more and more polarized. The minister Carl Gregg reminds us of the classical meaning of liberalism and conservatism. He writes, "When we describe Unitarian Universalism as a liberal religious movement, that is a reference not to a political party, but to the much older philosophical tradition of liberalism from the Latin root liber, meaning free. Unitarian Universalism cherishes the freedom for individuals to choose for themselves based on the dictates of their conscience." He says, "We seek to be liberal in the best sense of the word, open to new ideas, generous, open-handed, open-hearted, and open-minded. And that means," he says, "there is room within our big tent for those who are conservative in the best sense of the word, caring about the conservation of nature, upholding the beauty of traditions and rituals which have accrued deep meaning through time, reminding us of the importance of individual responsibility, community, authority, sanctity, and loyalty." There ends the quote. I've observed that within our congregation, we actually have quite a lot of that kind of diversity. We have liberal and conservative members in the classic sense, and we are stronger for it and wiser for it. And we all benefit when we keep our hearts and minds open to nuanced conversations. Political rhetoric is just too blunt a tool for that. Another reason for a church to maintain its separation is that to identify with a politician or a party can obscure our understanding of what winning means. While an election can open or close certain doors, winning in a revolutionary love kind of way is something much larger and longer term. It's something that only regular people working together can make happen. In our reading, Aurora Levins Morales encourages us to imagine winning. Levins Morales is a Puerto Rican Jewish writer. The title of her poem, Ve'ahavta, is the name of a traditional Jewish prayer. The words of that prayer are from the Hebrew scripture called Deuteronomy. The traditional Ve'ahavta says, "You shall love Adonai your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Take to heart these instructions with which I charge you this day. Impress them upon your children. Recite them when you stay at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you get up. Bind them as a sign on your hand and let them serve as a symbol on your forehead. Inscribe them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. In UU terms, we might take that to mean keep in front of you that which is worthy of your love, love of the highest order, and remember that. In Levin's Morales' poem, she echoes the prayer in humanist terms. Say these words when you lie down and when you rise up, when you go out and when you return, in times of mourning and in times of joy. Inscribe them on your doorposts, embroider them on your garments, tattoo them, teach them, recite them. Another world is possible. Another world is possible. A world where everyone eats and lives, where the sheer and astounding shamelessness, in Levin's Morales' words, the sheer and astounding shamelessness of the greed, the economic inequality that seems normal today is just not imaginable anymore, along with violence. A world where people are free to thrive. In the Hebrew scriptures, this world is the definition of peace, shalom. In Christian scriptures, it's called the kingdom of God. Levin's Morales invites us to visualize winning this other world. And she warns that if we who believe in love and liberation lay down our souls and become like that which we resist, then we will have lost everything. In other words, we can't achieve liberation and transformation through further dehumanization. We have to be on the lookout for that tendency, which lives within ourselves as well as in other people. And in order to achieve liberation and transformation, we have to keep our eyes on that true goal. We're not going to get there by going back to normal. It's one of the gifts of 2020, which, by the way, is officially the year of the rat, according to Chinese astrology. It is one of the gifts of this year that it has revealed some of our country's deadliest tendencies and patterns. Poverty, racism, lack of access to healthcare and sick leave, the neglect of so many of our elders. The poet Theodore Rothko writes, "In a dark time, the eye begins to see. In a dark time, the eye begins to see." This year, we all saw what has been there the whole time, what has been there through Republican and Democrat administrations for generations and generations. We saw those things result in suffering and death. We saw what happened to the Navajo Nation and to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Elijah McClain and others. We saw 10,000 cars waiting in line at a food bank in San Antonio, 10,000 cars. We saw that in this same year, in 2020, American billionaires have seen their wealth increase by $637 billion. That's over $500 billion. And that's what happens when politics favors the rich. The rich get richer while other people struggle to eat. Like a Jesus story, that food bank served all of those people, by the way. We saw all of this stuff and we can't unsee it. To go back to normal would be to accept a society that is deadly to our neighbors and to ourselves. This is not a moment, it's a movement. Kathy McGill preached that to us back in July when she visited. Remember that? This is not a moment, it's a movement. To truly win, like to win, is to live into the better world that's possible. It's possible if we keep in front of us that which is worthy of our love. If we stay true to it and we stay together. This hard year, it has moved us forward. The national conversation has changed. Have you noticed that? I was struck by it last night in the victory speeches, which included race and anti-racism in a direct way that we just haven't seen before. And now it's up to all of us to take all of our faith and hope and joy and keep moving forward together, even when things are hard. I want to close this morning with a story from Walking with the Wind. That's a memoir by the civil rights icon, John Lewis, who died this year. And in it, he tells this story from his childhood. It happened in front of his Aunt Suniva's house, where he was playing and goofing around in her dirt yard with about 15 other kids, when a sudden storm formed, a very dramatic one. And the sky turned dark and lightning flashed overhead. The wind began to howl. It was one of those really strong sudden storms that just strikes fear in people. And his Aunt Suniva was the only grown up there at that moment. And so she just brought all of the kids inside her house. This was a modest wood frame house. It had a tin roof that you could sometimes see the stars through at night, Lewis says. As the storm grew stronger right over that little house, the kids and Aunt Suniva grew very quiet and afraid. And then the house started to sway. And the wood plank flooring started to bend. The storm was trying to pull that little house right up into itself with the people still inside. Aunt Suniva told everybody to grab hands. Line up and hold on to each other tight, she said. And then she had them walk toward the corner of the house that was lifting. From the kitchen to the front of the house, we walked, Lewis says, the wind screaming outside, the sheets of rain beating on the tin roof. Then we walked back in the other direction as another end of the house began to lift. And with the weight of their little bodies, they held that house down. Lewis wrote, more than a half a century has passed since that day, and it has struck me more than once over those many years that our society is not unlike the children in that house, rocked again and again by the winds of one storm or another, the walls around us seeming at times as if they might fly apart. He remembers how in the 1960s, there was so much tension and division, it seemed like the country might burst at the seams. The greater the transformation, the stronger the forces of resistance. That's what we're living through again right now. But people of conscience stayed in the house, he says, linked together, the weight of each other's company outlasting the storms. And Lewis says they always knew there would be more storms and they'd have to do it all over again. So you understand. Another world is possible. Another world is possible. This week, a door was opened and a couple of glass ceilings were shattered. To quote another poet, give me your hand.
We take our offering with these words by the former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Our real business is helping people live lives with meaning and purpose. Our real business is helping to heal the brokenness in our world. Our real business is to love one another and to stand on the side of love. Our change for the future recipient for this quarter is SAGE, which provides support for older LGBT people in Albuquerque metropolitan area through advocacy, social programs, education, support groups, and resource distribution. SAGE counters isolation, fear, and loneliness by creating a caring community of LGBT elders who will look out for each other. Several members of this congregation are active with SAGE, and we are delighted to support them. You can make your offering by way of the link in the chat bar or simply sending a check to the church office. We now take the offering for the work of our church and the work of our church in our community.
Will you join me in singing another new song? Both of the songs today were brought to me by members of our own pastoral care choir, the Soul Singers. They share wonderful music with me. And this song has words by the Indian writer Arundhati Roy and music by Diane Kaplan, who lives in Israel. It's called Another World Is Not Only Possible, She Is On Her Way.
not only possible, she's on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her
is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and thank you on behalf of SAGE. So at the end of the service, like all our other services, we'll have breakout rooms, an opportunity to share the moment with our fellow congregants. And one possible question coming out of the sermon that we might want to ask each other is, what is that thing that is worthy of your love that you want to keep in front of you? What thing that is worthy of your love do you want to keep in front of you? And I'm going to put that in the chat bar. There you go. Enjoy your conversations.
We extinguish our candles and chalices with these words of benediction. This is the day we have been given. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Let us live wisely, love courageously, and bless all whom we are blessed to meet. Go in peace, friends.
Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand. And Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand. She said, all will be well, all will be well. All manner of things will be well. I said, Julian, do you not know? Do you not know about sorrow? And Julian, do you not know? Do you not know about pain? And I said, Julian, do you not know? Do you not know about hunger? And Julian, do you not know? Do you not know about shame? But she said, all will be well. All will be well. All. you not know about disease? And I said, Julian, do you not know about cruelty? I said, Julian, it's too much. It brought me to my knees. But she said, all will be well. Brought me to my knees where I heard all will be well. Do you not know about the spirit? She said, baby girl, do you not know?